Hello, hello, happy Halloween, and welcome to this very special episode, spooky episode, I must say, of Classical Baddies. My name is Sophia.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Nisha, and today we're going to be talking about curses and superstitions in operas. So there's generally a very large list of superstitions that occur in operas.
Yeah, I think the most superstitious people I have ever met in my entire life are actors, singers, and I know athletes are notorious, but I don't think I've talked to too many of them, but I know actors, singers, for sure. There's like a whole list of stuff you have to do before you go on stage. Everyone's got their own ritual, their own stuff that's absolutely taboo. Like some people, if they like even, you know, trip over a certain thing or something goes wrong in their ritual, like just absolutely are suffer to perform, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Artists are very superstitious. I don't know many athletes, but I do know that they are also very superstitious, just like you said.
I like that all of us are like, we don't know any athletes.
I don't know people who do sports, man.
What is a sport?
Yeah, if you do a sport, please drop us a message, DM us, let us know.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of superstitions that kind of link between dancers and like opera singers, like similar ones. I know that the flower one is a big one.
Yeah, flowers are a super superstitious thing for both opera singers and dancers, as well as actors. Anybody who performs on stage, really, I guess, is because a lot of people, I guess, back in the day, like a long time ago, instead of going out and buying, you know, brand new, expensive, lavish flowers, they would go to the local cemetery and they would steal flowers from there because they were free.
Yikes.
Which, right?
Hey, flowers are flowers, man. Don't knock it. Times are hard.
I mean, given what the superstition is, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe not. But yeah, so instead of that, they would bring them, you know, flowers from the grave. And this was bad because they thought that it would bring in death and ghosts and just many bad things and a lot of bad luck so that the show would end when it wasn't supposed to, before the real planned ending.
Yeah, because that's when you're supposed to bring the flowers after the show, because that's when you're supposed to throw them on stage instead of before the show. Because if you bring it before, the ghost has entered the building. But if you bring it after, it doesn't matter anymore.
You're inviting bad luck on the show right before it starts. And then if something bad happens, it's your fault.
Yeah, fake dagger's going to malfunction, whatever. Someone's going to hit by a sandbag.
You know, my acting teacher used to hate fake daggers. And a lot of tech people I've heard also and prop people hate fake daggers because it happens so often where they just don't go in. And so you literally end up stabbing people.
They're all plastic now anyway, right?
Yeah, but still, like imagine if a plastic thing gets jammed. Hard plastic, and you actually stab someone, right, with the force you would, expecting it to go in, and it doesn't. Like, my acting teacher said it went through the guy's shirt, and I think it was, like, armor, but obviously fake armor, so it, like, went through and, like, poked him, but I think it was fine, but still, like.
Who brought the flowers?
Who brought
those flowers?
Who wore purple?
Yeah. No, because the color purple is another one that's really associated. It's funny because that's been such a superstitious color for like throughout the time it's existed. Because before it was only for the rich because it was so expensive to make, and then when they could mass produce it, only the rich were allowed to wear it because they wanted to hold on to the special color. But apparently, because of its association with death, and I think I want to say Italy. That it's like considered part of funerals.
That
if you bring it into the theater and you show up wearing purple, it's again considered that you're bringing bad spirits in with you into the theater and you're going to curse the production. Because I think even people have halted productions if someone showed up wearing purple. Because I know there's one case, and I'm trying to think of it, but it's not coming to me off the top of my head, where they literally halted a production and sent everyone home because some jerk showed up in purple when they weren't supposed to. And
everyone go home.
Yes, like I showed up in purple again, that jerk.
You know, but the really funny thing is that like that's odd considering, well, in opera you're representing royalty a lot, so a lot of people wear purple because royalty wears purple. But if it's such a huge thing, like, so I guess Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I've seen a lot of purple on the stage.
Yeah, it's not as prominent, I don't think. It feels like more of an old world thing, especially because I know it's like a Catholic thing that the church, I think, banned it for a while during Lent. And I know in places like Italy, where there's a very large Catholic population, maybe something like that still held on.
Mm.
It's quite interesting with the fact that most of the superstitions, or some of the superstitions, are about bringing in death.
Yeah.
And about keeping it out rather than bringing it in or stuff like that.
Oddly, usually wouldn't want to invite a spirit in. I know there is the whole, story of ghost lights. Ghost lights are generally used for safety on stage. So generally when it's nighttime and everyone's going home, all the lights are off, people will leave that one light in the center on. And, you know, historically, the stories are that it's been when theaters were gaslit, they would leave the gas lights on really low just to kind of relieve some pressure on the gas valves.
Yeah.
Or even there's stories of this one, it's not ever been verified, but that a robber broke in and he tripped on the stage in the dark and then he sued the theater for damages.
He's trying to rob them?
He's trying to rob them, breaks his leg, and then he's like, "You guys, it's your fault that I broke my leg."
But can you imagine? He's like, "I was in the theater after dark," and they're like, "What were you doing in the theater after dark?"
That doesn't matter. So other than that, then there are those other stories and superstitions that come in with ghost lights.
Yeah, no, totally. That the ghost lights are there to let the ghosts come in and do their own shows, to appease them. You gotta let them have their moment in the spotlight, you know, from beyond the grave.
You know, I want to be an opera singer forever, and that includes when I die.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I get it. But other than just to let them perform and to appease them, it's also supposedly to keep them out and to keep them...
Yeah, like a nightlight.
You know, people are still here. Yeah, like a nightlight, I guess. Yeah. Which is interesting because, back to the appeasing, actually, in London, I believe there's a theater. I can't remember which one, but it's a prominent theater for opera. They keep one of the boxes, the front seats are bolted open permanently for the idea that the ghosts may want to perform and watch in the afterlife. So it's quite interesting. But it's also interesting how there's a duality to the ghost light, whether it's to bring them in and appease them or to keep them out and keep us safe. It's very different.
Well, a large part of opera fears and superstitions are about getting ghosts to go away. Toy, toy, toy. One of the most commonly said phrases in opera, right?
Yeah.
Good luck, but break a leg or whatever, but the proper way is toy, toy, toy. So actually, the place that it came from is that in the past, there is this belief that if you spit, you're scaring away evil spirits and curses. But, you know, spitting on people is not exactly the most sanitary thing, especially now in COVID. Could you imagine? We need to scare away the curses.
Hey, yo, good luck.
So people just took to saying toy, 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 which is imitating the sound, and then it wards off any bad luck before the performance.
Yeah. And what I find funny is break a leg also has a superstitious origin, because apparently it's considered bad luck to say good luck to someone before going on stage. It's this weird reverse psychology thing that if you wish someone good luck, so you wish them bad luck instead by saying break a leg. You're telling them to go hurt themselves on stage. And then also opera has its kind of own version. Break a leg wasn't enough. You gotta spit on people.
I was told this in Iceland, actually, by an opera singer that I met there, that in Italy, they say something that roughly, or that translates to in the wolf's mouth.
Huh?
Yeah, and it's another way of saying good luck.
Huh. Cool.
I guess it's because I don't really understand it, but that's what I was told, and I found that quite interesting.
That feels like that's got to translate a little differently.
Oh, is it in bocca al lupo?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Oh, disclaimer. We are talking about opera, and in opera there is a multitude of languages. Italian, German, French, sometimes Spanish, Russian, and none of these languages are our first languages. So we apologize if we pronounce things in the wrong way. We are learning, we're taking classes, but
we're trying really hard.
We are far from perfect. So yeah. Just, you know, bear with us.
We're trying our darndest here.
So one thing that people also do when they're backstage, I guess, I mean, I've never done it, but I've definitely heard that you should not do it, is whistling. Yeah. Mm. So like people spitting or saying toy, toy, toy to cast out evils, whistling is a bad omen, I guess, because people think it will draw in danger. And the reason for this is actually based in the roots of theater, which came from sailing.
Well, isn't the superstition that if you whistle, a sandbag will fall on your head?
I think so. Something along the lines of that. Yeah. Yeah. Because rigging the sets and stuff comes from sailing, because they took a lot of their mechanisms and turned it for stage. Mm. So the idea is that a lot of the crew would have secret codes that they would whistle, so that if you whistled backstage, they would miss their cue, or they would think that something was happening when it wasn't. You could be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and you'd have a piece of set fall on you, and you'd die, or just ruin the show.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
I find it really funny how many of these come from like just like a practical source.
Yeah.
Just like, don't whistle when you're backstage, it's distracting and you could miss cues. And it almost feels like someone got really annoyed one day. They're like, God, come on, Jonathan. Like, if you whistle one more time, the ghosts are going to get you. And this guy was like, oh my God, the ghosts are going to get me.
The sandbag. Like,
or he's like, I'm going to drop a sandbag on you on purpose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I work in tech things at my school. And like, the number one thing they tell you as soon as you even start to think about touching the pulleys and systems for the flies and the legs is, this is dangerous.
Yeah.
Be careful. Unless you know what you're doing, do not touch these. You know, and there's so much that you have to watch out for. Generally, they have a million systems in place to keep you safe. But like, the scariest is when you're adding weights and taking off weights to kind of balance the proportions. But either way, but definitely if you caused an issue to occur, like if you ruined a rehearsal, that would be terrifying. I would not want to be that person.
I think I'd quit on the spot.
And like, I mean, that's the reason you have to practice that stuff and get super familiar. And I know, what is the thing with the rehearsals? Like, if you mess up the rehearsal of a bad, because I know this is a big thing, and I've definitely had directors say this when I was in a show before, is a bad rehearsal is gonna be a good show. But I definitely know a bad rehearsal can lead to a very bad show. Or some even say that you're cursed, like if you have a really good dress rehearsal, that the show's gonna be bad. But I don't know. I feel like the bad rehearsal, bad show is, or good, sorry, bad rehearsal, good show, was really a director just trying to convince themselves everything's going to be okay. Well, after rough one.
I think an important distinction in that is, were the rehearsals up until that good? You know? If it's just been bad rehearsals right from the beginning, then no, it's not going to mean it's a good show. But if it's been good rehearsals and then just the night before the show you have a bad rehearsal, I could buy that. I could buy that. That means you'll have a good show.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone's having just like some pre-show nervousness, and it's going to smooth out once the adrenaline kicks in a little bit and people have a chance to calm down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Similarly to like whistling, there's also other things that are kind of taboo in the world of theater, like the Color Purple and whistling. But you know how Macbeth is like a swear word in the theater world?
Oh, big time. People are crazy about that. Isn't it, to get rid of it, you have to spin three times, spit on the ground, leave the theater, and come back?
Is that? I don't know. I have
never heard of that before.
I mean, I've
seen people do it.
I've heard that.
I think someone made me do it. Yeah.
I just thought you say it, you're done.
No, you have to like ward it off. You have to spit. I think either you have to leave her. Yeah. Yeah, you got to scare those ghosts off. You got to scare old Macbeth away. Yeah.
Yeah, but well, for opera, the Macbeth of opera is actually Tosca. And so the reason is that there have been, similarly to Macbeth, there have been a lot of shows where people are performing performing opera, performing Tosca, and there have been injuries. So like some people, yeah. like when they jump from great heights, they like miss their pad, the landing pad, or like there's this one lady who jumped and missed it and then broke both her legs. And yeah. or like there have been like wigs that have caught on fire, prop guns that like explode.
How did you catch your wig on fire? Did someone just get too close to a candle or?
Maybe. I don't know. Or maybe
too much hairspray.
There's hairspray and then the lights are too intense. I don't know.
Like a magnifying glass.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh,
that's really weird, because I know Macbeth, a lot of it stems from like people are saying, oh, Shakespeare used like real witches' curses in the witches' lines. And I know there's a Macbeth opera, although you hear it a lot more with theater, because I mean the theater show is more prominent. But I don't know, because in Tosca it's not like they're using some weird incantations in it, or it's not like Verdi cursed it or something.
Verdi didn't come in and was like, yes, I want you to die.
Also, it wasn't Verdi. It was definitely Puccini. I don't know my operas.
I mean, look, there are so many composers and so many operas, and we're talking about a million things. It's fair enough that we'll mix a couple things up. Well, on the theme of creepy operas.
Yeah, cursed operas. One of the more well-known and well-backed-up cursed operas is Richard Wagner's.
Did you just call him Richard?
Richard.
Anyways, Wagner.
Wagner, what's up?
The famously anti-Semitic composer.
Who cheats on his wife many, many times.
Yes.
We're really stuck on this, aren't we?
It is bad enough that he's anti-Semitic. He just had to tick an extra box in the sin column.
But yes, we're going to be talking about Tristan and Isolde. However, for the synopsis, I will be handing it over to Sophia.
Oh,
because she knows more about the opera than I do.
Yeah, I did write a paper about it. I mean, as long as we're calling him Richard, let's call it Tristan and Isolde.
No!
if it's not pronounced that way, I apologize. That's just always how I say it in my head.
Wagner. Just Wagner for now.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what most people can agree on.
I'm not even used to hearing his first name. Also, yeah. His name's Wilhelm Richard. Ricard Wagner.
Ricard, yeah. Wilhelm? Wilhelm?
Wilhelm. Ricard.
Wilhelm.
Wagner.
Billy, yeah.
Hey guys, it's Katie. I'm just jumping in here to let you guys know that in this next section, we begin to talk about death, suicide, and speaking of wishing for one's own death within the opera. If this makes you uncomfortable, please don't feel obligated to continue listening. And we hope you have an amazing Halloween.
Well, I mean, the opera itself, a lot of the subject matter of it, I mean, it's of course deals with like this very cursed love between this Irish princess sorceress and, you know, the young soldier that's sent to fetch him for his uncle to marry. And of course, the two of them fall madly in love and defy his uncle's orders. And I mean, a lot of it has to deal with death, because these two sad, sad people just sing about how they want to die. Pretty much the entire opera. But death in this one is actually used as like a euphemism for sex, which is actually really interesting. The reason why this one in particular was like so revolutionary at its time was really just because he built the entire thing on a tritone, which was unheard of the time, like the entire harmonics until the very end when it resolves. And spoiler alert, it's a dramatic opera, you know they're gonna die. When Isolde like sings herself to death and she finally like is united with Tristan, that's when it finally resolves. Like the resolution of the chord is the signal of her passing.
Yeah.
Which is...
Well, and I mean like, it's like Shakespeare, right? When the opera or the play is named after you, it means you're gonna die. Right? Salome.
Yes, your name's
Electra,
in the title. Sorry.
Tristan and Isolde. Yeah.
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, totally. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is built on the devil's triad, the tritone.
Hi.
Talking about Wagner sinning.
Well, I mean...
Wagner,
I'm just gonna...
Adultery, the devil's chord.
Okay, anyways, so besides the cursed love between the two of them, there is also a curse about the opera itself and performing it. The curse supposedly started when Wagner was married to his wife.
That he cheated on
many times. The curse of Tristan and Isolde, which is actually just called the curse of Tristan, originally started during the composition of the entire opera when Wagner was cheating on his wife and she found out about it, so she left him. However, even though she left him, him and his mistress at the time broke it off. So he no longer had the freedom to sleep with her because he was still technically, first of all, he was still technically married for the next 10 years, by the way. Whoa. And his life began to fall apart. It took him 5 years to finish writing the piece and another 6 years to arrange for the original performance, mostly due to the difficulties of finding funding and finding people who were talented enough and willing to endure the brutal songs for the main leads. They're both dramatic voices as well.
Yeah, and I just want to ask, so you mean like brutal in terms of just the role is insanely demanding, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yes. No, yes.
Brutal, I'm like, what did he do to those singers?
No, he didn't. As far as we know, he didn't do anything to those singers.
Well, like,
not confirmed.
Wagner is like notoriously difficult to sing. Like, he's like one of the only composers that I know of that is, you know, specifically like there are Wagnerian singers. You know, like there are Rossini singers and like people who have specializations, but you really need to be a Wagnerian singer to be able to sing Wagner. You know?
Yeah, I mean, the Rossini stuff, it's more like bel canto specialist, and then it's like the Italian bel canto, you kind of stick to that area kind of a specialist, but it's Wagner, it's Wagner.
Yeah.
So because he was notorious for that, the pieces for the lead singers were obviously brutal and very difficult to sing, often going to their highest notes and their lowest notes, and they sang over a massive orchestra.
Mm-hmm. He's probably like, if I want to die, you're going to want to die too.
Yeah, so he hired two of the best dramatic voices of the time, who I believe were married. They have the same last name, and their names were Ludwig and Melvina. Again, I'm so sorry if I pronounced those terribly. Other than the two greatest dramatic voices during the time, he also hired a genius conductor, Hans von Bülow, whom Wagner was also sleeping with his wife during
Wagner,
this time.
Wagner, get together!
Oh, I just got that. He was sleeping with the conductor.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Wagner. Oh, my goodness.
This was after his original affair as well.
Oh, my God. Oh, and Ludwig and Melvina, they're married, right? They're husband and wife.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Ludwig and Melvina were married, which I guess is romantic. So, yeah, he was sleeping with his conductor's wife, which was, I guess, a great time for him. The premiere was originally scheduled for May 15th, 1865. However, due to the fact that Melvina got sick and lost her voice for almost a full month, which is a very long time for your voice to heal, so something like very bad must have happened, they had to postpone it. So instead,
even if she wasn't like super sick, I mean, for a role like Wagner, if you don't have access to all your notes at full power, there's no way you're going to be able to do that.
No. It was incredibly difficult to find these two, and then she lost her voice before the original premiere. So instead of premiering on May 15th, 1865, they premiered on June 10th, 1865, the same year. Now, when they at first showed this, there was a very, very poor reception to it. People didn't like it. They didn't like the tritone, and they hated it. But I think one thing that's really interesting to think about is the fact that before it premiered, they had 70 rehearsals. They had to push a showing of it in Vienna, I believe, before its original premiere because they had to rehearse it still. Oh, I've never been in an opera, but I'm sure Nusha can tell us that that's a lot of rehearsals.
Definitely. I mean, the opera that we had just performed at my school, we had started it last year to do it in the summer. But then because of COVID, it got canceled. And then we came back and started rehearsing again this year to perform it. So it was like an eight month span where we were working on the same opera. But we did have like a giant break in the middle. But even still, like just working on it for that long, I really loved it. But by the end, you're like, okay, I'm ready to move on to something
new.
Yeah,
and could you imagine working with Wagner for 70 rehearsals?
Oh,
and not the person necessarily.
I've never personally met the man, but... You know, maybe if I take flowers off his grave, he'll come along. Sorry.
Oh my. Well, but I mean, like, just apparently, even just...
Sorry, I'm going to get us in trouble.
No. Okay. But so singing Tristan, like Ludwig, like, was so overwhelmed.
Yeah. He actually passed away in July 21st, 1865, the same year.
Oh my God.
The next month.
It was only after singing it four times, right?
Yeah.
And then, get this. Okay. His wife was so depressed over his death, She never sang again, even though she lived another 38 years.
She quit on the spot. She was like, my husband is dead. I'm not doing this. It is unknown whether she blames the opera or Wagner for it at all. She never made a statement on that.
Her husband did just die.
Fair enough.
And, like, whenever she's singing the role from now on, it's with some other guy who's playing the role that was made for her husband. Like, you could see how she would not be particularly keen to stay around there.
It wasn't just Ludwig that died. Yeah. Right?
Actually, many years later, in 1911, a conductor named Felix
Model?
Yes. Suffered a heart attack during the second act. However, he's not the only person who died of a heart attack during the second act.
They say it was the stress of performing that.
Oh my god, what scene is that? Is it the garden scene? I don't know if it says, but I have a feeling it's the garden scene.
They don't say. So, because Felix Model is not the only one who died of a heart attack, in 1968, another conductor named Joseph Keilberth also had a heart attack during the second act, and supposedly it happened during the same number.
My god. This one kills people.
Yeah.
Well, Wagner passed away in 1883. And Tristan und Isolde premiered in 65. And then he did another production of it in 1874.
Okay.
Right? But then after that he died, and then the next time it was performed was in 1886, and his widow oversaw the performance.
Yeah. Wow. Was this the wife he cheated on?
Kazima?
His first wife died 10 years after. So, yeah, his first wife died in 1870-ish.
And so it must have been his second wife. But apparently the production that she oversaw, Kazima oversaw, was widely acclaimed.
Oh.
So apparently she did a better job of it. I don't know. Or maybe people were just ready for the modern deviled tritone by then.
Tristan's Curse. And I guess that's why it's called Tristan's Curse, because it seems to be taking out the men.
Yeah, it really only took out the men. The only woman that it, quote unquote, took out was most likely just because of her own grief and the fact that she lost her husband, which nobody could ever blame somebody for, I don't think.
Yeah. Although it mirrors it kind of in a gruesome way, because in the plot, Tristan accidentally tears his own wound open when he's so excited to be reunited with Isolde that he dies in her arms. And then Isolde, out of her grief, like, just kind of passes away gently. Like, she sings herself, like, into heaven is kind of the way it's represented. So they kind of mirror that in a really gruesome way. Yeah.
Well, kind of similar to in Faust, right? When, what's her name?
Marguerite, sorry. Yeah, that's a drink.
Yeah, no, Marguerite.
Delicious.
When Marguerite, at the end of the opera, has been shunned by the entire town because the guy slept with her and then left her, and she's pregnant with his child and has had his child, and also killed her brother. Right? Because Faust killed her brother, the only person that was caring for her, and so. She now no longer has a brother. The entire town hates her, and she has a child. She's a single mother. So she's so depressed and upset that she basically sings and then ascends into
heaven. Yeah, because is that when Faust shows up and is like, come with me to the dark side? And then she's like, no, I believe in the Lord. And then the Lord comes and gets her.
Yeah. So Marguerite was so hysterical after everything that happened. She killed her own child. Yeah, and so she was in prison for killing her child. And then Mephistopheles helps Faust break into the prison to save her from being hung. Yeah. But she's like, no, like, I want to go to God. Like, I want to...
Yeah, did the crime. She wants to face her punishment, right?
Well, she kind of wants to trust her fate to God, kind of. And just, like, because she knows that technically it wasn't her fault. She trusts in, like, the forgiveness of God or whatever, I guess. Yeah. And Mephistopheles wants to get her soul and Faust's soul. Yeah. And like, she realizes that Faust was the real reason that all this happened. Cause then she's like, why are you covered in blood? And like freaks out and all this stuff. And then, Mephistopheles is kind of like upset that he's losing her, and like angels kind of are like, oh, she's saved, and like blah blah blah. And then she's like opened and goes opened up, and oh, she's not opened up, heaven opens up, and like her soul rises into heaven.
There's a lot of death in opera, which is common.
Yeah, it's the stereotype.
Lots of drama.
Yeah.
So on that spooky note, this was our extra long Halloween episode, and we hope you guys liked it.
Yeah. That you can find us on social media. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, at Classical Baddies, of course.
Yeah, and you can stream the podcast on Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and Google Music.
But yeah, make sure you guys can give us like a rate and a review where it lets you do it. Just because that really helps us out. We love to hear your feedback and hear what you guys think, or what maybe something you'd like to hear in the future. We're always open for suggestions.
Share us with your friends if you think that we're funny, or you think that we're interesting at all.
If you think we're funny, yeah.
Well, not just that, but if you think that we're interesting and you have any interest in what we're talking about, or you think that you could learn anything or just enjoy listening and you want to share.
Yeah, and generally most of our sources come from just searching. We use Wikipedia, the Metropolitan Opera page, like metopera.org has a lot of information that we find, among other blogs and things like that. But yeah, all right. Thanks, guys.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Make sure to tune in next week.